Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Power and corruption abuse that comes with any power are manifested in different ways and areas in the Israeli society as in any other society. But the Israeli domination over the Palestinians has been the most vile, cruel, destructive, and dangerous of all, and the least covered by the Israeli press in general.
Longtime Israeli journalist Amira Haas. As Israel intensifies its attacks on Gaza and South Africa calls on the International Court of Justice to order Israel to halt its assault on Rafah, we spend the hour with Haaretz correspondent Amira Haas, the only Israeli Jewish journalist to have spent 30 years living in and reporting from Gaza and the West Bank. This week, she's the graduating class of the Columbia Journalism School. Many of the student journalists there threatened with arrest as they dared to go outside their doors to cover what was happening on the Columbia campus, with well over 100 students arrested as a Gaza solidarity encampment.
The journalism that I chose to practice is based on the refusal to see injustice as normal, the refusal to normalize it to a point that we do not see it. This is exactly what the students here in Colombia and in so many other campuses in the US and now in Europe have been doing. Refuse to accept hell as normal.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's deadly attacks throughout the Gaza Strip are intensifying, with thousands more Palestinians in northern Gaza now cut off from food and water, as Israel says its troops are fighting in Jabalia's city center. Israel's attacks on Rafah are also ongoing, after more than a half a million people taking refuge in the southern city were forced to flee. The U.S. said its first aid shipments have started via its temporary Gaza pier after several weeks of construction. But the U.N. reiterated that all humanitarian access points to Gaza need to be opened up.
To stave off the horrors of famine, we must use the fastest and most obvious route to reach the people of Gaza. And for that, we need access by land now.
That was the UN Secretary General's deputy spokesperson, Farhan Haq. Many Gazans have rejected the U.S. pier. These are displaced Palestinians in Nuseirat.
We don't want ships. We want the border crossing to open, for people to come and go. We want safety. We want official borders. Those planes as well that they bring here with the parachutes, and they throw food at us like dogs, like beggars. That does not work. It falls on houses. It falls on people. It brings us problems.
We reject dealing with the ships and the American ships because it gives us, it will take away from us. Maybe they want to take over the gas fields that are in the sea, or maybe they are here to displace the Palestinian people and to transfer people from one country to another.
Spain has denied port access to an Israeli-bound ship from India carrying explosives. Spain says it will no longer allow ships with weapons for Israel to use its ports. Spain has also vowed to recognize Palestinian statehood by July. Foreign ministers from 13 countries signed onto a letter warning Israel to halt its ground operations in Rafah and to get more aid to Palestinians. The letter was signed by all G7 members, minus the United States. Germany, France, the UK, Italy, Japan, and Canada, as well as the foreign ministers of Australia, Denmark, the Netherlands, New Zealand, South Korea, and Sweden. In The Hague, the International Court of Justice has ordered representatives for Israel to submit more information about humanitarian conditions in its so-called evacuation zones in Gaza by tomorrow. The request came as the ICJ closed its second day of hearings on South Africa's request for emergency measures to halt Israel's assault on Rafah. Israel denied it's carrying out a genocide in Gaza as it addressed the court today. Briefings were halted for a moment when a protester yelled liars as the Israeli delegation spoke. Yesterday, South Africa presented its case.
Israel's genocide has continued apace and has just reached a new and horrific stage. Israel has sought to hide its crimes through the weaponization of international humanitarian law. It pretends that the civilians it ruthlessly kills through its 2,000-pound bombs, through its targeted airstrikes, through its artificial intelligence systems, through its executions are human shields.
We'll have more on the World Court hearings later in the broadcast. Police continued their violent crackdown and student Gaza solidarity protests this week with arrests and raids Thursday at University of California, Berkeley, as well as DePaul University in Chicago. This is DePaul student body president Parveen Mundi.
It's really important to us that, you know, for the people of Palestine, knowing that, you know, I'm a student body president and I go to a university, and at the same time, there are no universities left in Gaza. We're all responsible for making sure that our tuition dollars aren't going towards genocide.
Faculty at Morehouse College, a historically black college in Atlanta, Georgia, voted 50-38 in favor of conferring an honorary doctorate to President Biden when he delivers a commencement speech on Sunday. Biden's visit to Morehouse has been met with protests from students over his response to what's happening in Gaza. In New York State, students at Bard College have just taken over the school's administration building. Meanwhile, Columbia students and faculty on Thursday celebrated an alternative people's graduation at the nearby Cathedral of St. John the Divine. We'll have more from that ceremony later in the broadcast. This comes as the Washington Post reports a group of billionaires and business interests privately pressured New York City Mayor Eric Adams to deploy police on pro-Palestinian protests at Columbia University. A WhatsApp group with some of the country's wealthiest people detailed donations to Adams' campaign and conversations with the mayor. Some of those involved include real estate magnate Barry Sternlicht, Daniel Lubetsky, founder of the Kind Snacks brand, hedge fund manager Daniel Loeb, and founder of Thor Equities, Joseph Sitt. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected a challenge to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's funding mechanism that could have undermined the agency charged with protecting borrowers from predatory loans and other abuses by banks and financial entities. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich praised the justices for protecting the CFPB from, quote, attacks by shady payday lenders, adding since 2011, the CFPB has put $17.5 in the pockets of 200 million Americans who have been defrauded, unquote. In other Supreme Court news, the New York Times is reporting an upside down, which is a symbol used by Trump supporters and election deniers, hung outside the home of Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito in January 2021, just before Biden's inauguration. The revelations are expected to reignite calls for Justice Alito to recuse himself from cases related to the January 6th insurrection, including Trump's attempt to claim immunity from election subversion charges. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has pardoned Daniel Perry, the U.S. Army sergeant who was convicted and sentenced to 25 years for murdering Black Lives Matter protester Garrett Foster in 2020. Ahead of the murder, Perry posted on social media he planned to shoot, quote, looters, and posted dozens of racist and Islamophobic messages and images. While people with felonies are not permitted to own firearms in Texas, Governor Abbott's pardon means Perry will be legally allowed to carry and possess a gun. In other news from Texas, at least 4 people are dead, nearly a million are without power after heavy rains and powerful storms battered the Houston area Thursday night, causing massive floods and destruction. The Biden administration's moving to end all new coal leasing in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming and Montana, the largest coal-producing region in the United States. The move comes in response to a lawsuit by environmental groups. Meanwhile, in Florida, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a bill that removes all references to climate change in state law and weakens regulations on pipelines, among other measures. The move eliminates climate change as a priority in Florida's energy policy decisions, despite Florida being on the front lines of the climate crisis as it faces worsening hurricanes, rising sea levels, extreme heat, and toxic algae blooms. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, families gathered Wednesday to bury nearly 24 children who were killed earlier this month after rocket attacks on camps for displaced people near the city of Goma. Another 13 victims, mostly women, were also buried. Mourners blame the M23 armed group for the killings and condemn neighboring Rwanda for backing the group. This is Congolese Human Rights Minister Albert Fabrice Puela.
A Congolese genocide for economic reasons is being perpetrated in our country by Rwanda. War crimes, such as those of May 3rd and Mugunga, crimes against humanity, have all been documented.
Rwanda has denied the accusation, saying the attacks were likely carried out by militias backed by the Congolese army. Intensifying violence in the eastern DRC has forced hundreds of thousands to flee as armed groups vie for control of the country's natural resources.
There are a lot of foreign countries behind Rwanda President Paul Kagame, and they're killing my people because of the minerals that the Congo has. If they want to work with the Congo, they shouldn't go through Kagame. Let them come and negotiate with us, and we'll know how to help to them so that we can all benefit from it.
In other news about Rwanda, Human Rights Watch said Rwandan immigration authorities denied entry to one of its researchers this week. Human Rights Watch said the move, quote, exposes the government's deep-seated hostility to human rights monitoring and independent scrutiny of any kind, unquote. Back in the U.S., immigrant rights groups continue to demand the Biden administration immediately halt deportations to Haiti and enact protections for Haitian migrants as the island nation faces a worsening humanitarian crisis, deepening gang violence and political instability. Advocates said Thursday another group of Haitian asylum seekers have been deported, the second deportation flight since April. The Haitian Bridge Alliance said the, quote, deeply troubling policy places vulnerable individuals in grave danger, unquote. And the Biden administration took a major step towards reclassifying marijuana from Schedule I drug to Schedule III. The move will not decriminalize marijuana, but acknowledges its medical benefits and differentiates it from lethal drugs like heroin or meth. The move would also ease tax burdens on states that have legalized marijuana sales. Biden hailed the monumental step Thursday.
No one should be in jail merely for using or possessing marijuana, period. Far too many lives have been upended because of failed approach to marijuana, and I'm committed to righting those wrongs.
As a senator, Joe Biden authored the 1986 Anti-Drug Abuse Act, enacting new mandatory minimum sentences for drugs, including marijuana. The law led to a fivefold increase in the jailing of black people. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, we'll be joined by Haaretz correspondent Amira Haas, the only Israeli Jewish journalist to have spent 30 years living in and reporting from Gaza and the West Bank. Stay with us.
Where you go, I will go, my friend. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, my friend. Where you go, I will go. 'Cause your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Our struggles align. Thank you. I will go, my friend. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, my friend. Where you go, I will go. 'Cause your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Our struggles.
Where you go, I will go. Sung by the Liberated Zone, a folk troupe that began when the members were part of the Gaza Solidarity encampment at Columbia University. They sang the song while they were being arrested by the NYPD. They performed Thursday at the People's Graduation, a gathering for justice and peace at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. We'll have more from that ceremony later in the show. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel is intensifying its bombardment of the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, destroying dozens of residential buildings and heavy airstrikes overnight, and pushing residents to flee to other parts of the city. This comes as Israel is vowing to escalate its ground attack in the southernmost city of Rafah, with Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant saying Thursday additional troops would enter Rafah and that military operations will intensify in the city. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also said Thursday, quote, "The battle in Rafah is critical," unquote. 1.4 million Palestinians, or half of Gaza's population, had been displaced to Rafah seeking shelter. Now more than 600,000 have fled Rafah over the past week and a half since Israel launched its ground offensive there. Since then, no food, fuel, or other aid has entered the two main border crossings in southern Gaza, further exacerbating the humanitarian crisis. Some 1.1 million Palestinians are on the brink of starvation, according to the UN, while a full-blown famine is taking place in the north, this confirmed by the World Food Program. The developments come as the International Court of Justice has wrapped up 2 days of hearings in The Hague after South Africa's request last week for emergency measures to halt Israel's assault on Rafah. It marked the third time the UN's top court held hearings on Gaza since South Africa filed a case in December accusing Israel of committing genocide. On Thursday, South Africa's ambassador to the Netherlands, Vusimuzi Modonsela, urged the court to order Israel to totally and unconditionally withdraw from the Gaza Strip.
When we last appeared before this court to halt this genocidal process, to preserve Palestine and its people, instead, Israel's genocide has continued apace and has just reached a new and horrific stage. Israel has sought to hide its crimes through the weaponizing of international humanitarian law. It pretends that the civilians it ruthlessly kills through its 2,000-pound bombs, through its targeted airstrikes, through its artificial intelligence systems, through its executions are human shields. This whitewashing of Israel's genocide misses the key and fundamental element, that of the massive and still mounting evidence of Israel's genocidal intent.
Israel presented its defense at the World Court today and denied its carrying out a genocide in Gaza. This is the head of the Israeli delegation to the court, Gilad Noam.
South Africa presents the court yet again, for the fourth time, within the scope of less than 5 months, with a picture that is completely divorced from the facts and circumstances. Israel is engaged in a difficult and tragic armed conflict. South Africa ignores this factual context, which is essential in order to comprehend the situation, and also ignores the applicable legal framework of international humanitarian law. It makes a mockery of the heinous charge of genocide.
The International Court of Justice today ordered representatives for Israel to submit more information about humanitarian conditions in its so-called evacuation zones in Gaza. This comes as foreign ministers from 13 countries have signed on to a letter warning Israel to halt its ground operations in Rafah and to get more aid to Palestinians. The letter signed by all G7 members minus the United States. For more, we're joined by longtime Israeli journalist Amira Haas. Born in 1956 in Jerusalem, her parents, Holocaust survivors, she's for the occupied Palestinian territories based in Ramallah. She's the only Israeli Jewish journalist to have spent 30 years living in and reporting from Gaza and the West Bank. Her books include Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege. Amira Haas is the recipient of the 2024 Columbia Journalism Award, and on Wednesday she addressed the graduating class of the Columbia Journalism School here in New York. She now joins us in our New York studio. Amira, welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
Congratulations on your award, but more importantly, on your reporting. You are so unusual in Israel as the only Israeli Jewish journalist to live in the occupied territories for the last 30 years. As you gave your address to the Columbia Journalism School, a number of its students threatened by New York police to even step outside the school when they were trying to cover the Gaza Solidarity encampment outside as police moved in. And ultimately, I think the number of arrests on campus numbered more than 200. Can you talk about the coming together of the issues that you cover and what you feel it's so important that journalists should understand about their role in society?
As I said in my address to the students, it is, if I want to sum it up, not in a professional way or like a teacher-like way, is to resist the normalization of evil and of injustice. Because we are so used to so, there is so much injustice in this world, not in everywhere. And we have to use our the unwritten social contract between us and citizens the world over to scrutinize, to monitor, to challenge power, centers of power, the abusive power. Any power can be abusive or is abusive. Only we have the power to at least try and restrain it. I think this should be the role, not the only role, but this should be a main role of journalists, to restrain power wherever it is being manifested.
Ever the journalist in your J School address, you quoted a friend in Gaza. And this is particularly important as what happened just feet from where the school is. If you can tell us who he is and what he said.
Yeah. Just a few 2 weeks before the address, I received a WhatsApp from a friend called Bassam Nasser. I met him in the early 90s when he was still a student. And we haven't been in touch for many years. He is a father of four. He's heading an aid institution or center in Gaza. He was displaced, like so many others, from Gaza to Rafah to save his life. His house, I know, is in ruins now in Gaza. And now he had to flee again with his family and the institution from Rafah to Deir el-Balah in the center. And he sent me a he from time to time writes something on WhatsApp in English, and I guess he shares it with some others. And he shares his thoughts and feelings. And he shared with me something concerning the demonstrations and protests in American campuses. And I thought, of course, fit to bring it to read it, so I can read it now. So, and this is from the talk and what I, the quote that I brought to the on Wednesday to the students. A glimmer of hope emerges from university students, demonstrating the enduring presence of humanity. Panicked, hypocritical politicians swiftly resort to force in order to quell the movement, fearing its global expansion. Repression is enacted to stifle voices challenging the status quo. Police and National Guards are deployed, arresting students who were expelled just hours earlier for speaking out against the violence in Palestine. From Gaza to New York and other major cities worldwide, I want to express deep gratitude for these voices. While you may not be able to save every child in Gaza or restore our shattered lives and dreams, and your efforts won't prevent the next devastating airstrike that will wipe out our entire family, on behalf of every Palestinian, I want to express heartfelt appreciation for raising awareness to our plight. And I know he's not the only one. I mean, I know that if there was some kind of a ray of hope in people's life, in people's hell, it's not life, in the last month, are those demonstrations and protests.
Now, I wanted to go to someone else talking about those protests. You gave your graduation address on Wednesday at the Columbia Journalism School. The president, Manoush Shafiq, had canceled the main graduation ceremony because of the protests. But yesterday, faculty, to say the least, completely exhausted, organized a people's graduation. Columbia students and faculty celebrated an alternative people's graduation as they gathered for a ceremony just nearby at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, with many students wearing their blue graduation gowns. On the stage with the professors was the Reverend Herbert Daughtry, the New York civil rights leader who was an early mentor to now Mayor Eric Adams, whose claim the protests at Columbia were, quote, co-opted by professional outside agitators. But among the speakers who addressed the students was the poet Fadi Judah, poem dedication about Palestinians killed by Israel, the Palestinian-American lawyer and human rights activist Noura Erekat, and the award-winning journalist Mona Chalabi, who has rejected her 2023 Pulitzer Prize and has been highly critical of Gaza coverage by mainstream U.S. media outlets. In her address, she paid tribute to the student journalists in the audience who covered the Gaza encampment, often while facing arrest themselves.
Hi, Habibis. I'm just going to talk to you for 2 minutes because I have the huge honor of acknowledging my fellow journalists in the room. So, as many of you know, our institutions have failed us these past 7 months and long before. Writers and editors at some of the most respected newsrooms have told lies about what is happening in Gaza. They have said that death threats falling from the skies are evacuation orders. They have described forced displacement as migration. They have issued warnings to their staff, telling them not to use words like ethnic cleansing or genocide. In short, they've used their reporting to minimize the suffering in Gaza and maintain the status quo. And they've had that reporting honored by the Pulitzers. They've even sought to discredit or ignore Palestinian journalists like Hind, who face death every day. So I shouldn't have been surprised when I heard what happened last month. A reporter of the New York Times was told that something seemed to be happening at Columbia University. Students appeared to have claimed a lawn as theirs. So like any breaking news story, a Slack channel had been created for the journalists to discuss details and assign stories. This is what they do at the New York Times. When this reporter joined the Slack channel, they were surprised to find that it had been titled Anti-Semitism on Campus. They had decided what the story was before they even took a train uptown. Meanwhile, journalists on campus have had a very different perspective. You had begun reporting before a single tent was assembled. You have not only witnessed the encampments, you listened to the chants, you read the signs, and you spoke to the organizers. You did the work, and you did it so well that journalists like me off campus turned to your words, your Instagram accounts, and we listened to your radio stations if we wanted the truth. harassed, assaulted, and arrested you and your fellow students. And you did it all.